Wouldn't it be great if more of your fellow parishioners listened to Issues Etc.? Well, here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. The bulletin blurb is updated weekly, issuesetc.org. Stay connected, issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to talk Just War with Ken Samples. Many people reject the concept outright. There is war is bad, war is evil, war is messy, it is deadly. There's so few ways to think about war. Are there any ways to think about war that make it a positive? And we are war averse, aren't we? As we've grown more efficient at waging war technologically, we've grown more averse to waging war and morally timid when it comes to these things. Unsure whether we know we're doing the right thing. Is it ever right? Is it ever justified? Is that what we mean by just war, that we can somehow justify it? Ken Samples is our guest for the remainder of this hour. You can join us with your questions or your comments on Just War Theory, 1-877-623-MYIE. We are coming to you live this Thursday afternoon, February the 17th, 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet @issuesetc. Ken Samples is a senior research scholar for Reasons to Believe based in Pasadena, California, author of several books, including A World of Difference, Putting Christian Truth Claims to the Worldview Test. And he's also written a recent article titled War, What Is It Good For? Sometimes It's Absolutely Necessary. Ken, welcome back.
Hi, Todd. Good to be with you.
I was fascinated to discover that it wasn't until you were in the eighth grade that you were aware of your father's distinguished military career.
That's exactly right. I knew that my father had been in World War II, but as I say in the article, you know, growing up in the late 60s, early 70s, I wanted to be the point guard for the Los Angeles Lakers or be a member of the Beatles. But I was in eighth grade, which at that time they required you to study World War II, and so I decided this would be an opportunity to write a report on it. So when I got home, I said to my dad, could we go to a bookstore, maybe get a couple references on World War II? So we bought a couple, and we get the book home, start looking through it. It's titled The Decline and Fall of Nazi Germany and Imperial Japan. And Todd, lo and behold, I see on two different pages photographs of my father. And an epiphany went off in my head. And since that time, I decided that, wow, you know, maybe the most profound role model for me was the man that slept in the bedroom across the hall. And it not only led me to a great admiration for my father, I subsequently discovered that he had received the Bronze Star, the Purple Heart, Good Conduct Medal, but it also really elicited a lot of thought about history and about warfare. And how God relates to all of these kinds of issues. So it was really a powerful time of my life. And though my father's been dead 25 years, I think about him almost daily and what a great role model he was for me.
The issue of war, I think, generally speaking, people kind of fall on one of two sides nowadays. And we're talking about nowadays. Things were very different in the time when your father went off to war, especially the way people thought about it. But nowadays, people either reject the notion of war altogether. It is an unqualified evil, intrinsically evil, and therefore to be avoided at all costs. Some of them go so far as to adopt pacifism. On the other side, sad to say, there are those who say, look, war is war, war is hell. If you got to do it, you got to do it, and morality be damned. Why must the Christian understanding of war fall somewhere between those two on sound, logical, rational, and biblical grounds?
Yeah, that's a very important question, and I certainly agree with you that attitudes about war have changed very much from 50 or 60 years ago. Well, I think to answer your question, to put it candidly, I think that people who are not willing to fight for freedom, to to defend the rights of the innocent, I see that as immoral. I mean, if there is a regime that is willing to destroy innocent human beings, and if we're not willing to stand up for it, it is immoral. On the other side, I think that obviously Christians, generally speaking, have supported just war theory. It goes all the way back to the ancient world. Augustine supported it. The Catholic philosopher Thomas Aquinas, even the reformers Martin Luther and John Calvin affirmed a perspective on just war theory. But obviously, if we're going to engage in war, we must do it for just reasons, and we must carry it out or wage war in a just way. And so I think there's a lot of hazy smokescreen, you know, views of thinking about war, but I'm grateful that many of Christianity's greatest thinkers have considered it important enough to write about and to talk about.
Where do we begin in laying the groundwork for a sound theory of just war?
Well, I think that in a very simple way, I think really it comes down to two basic moral considerations. The first one would be the justness of war itself. That would be what are the reasons we can go in good conscience to war? So do we have just reasons for waging war to begin with? The second one would be, how is that war waged in a just way? And so I think both of those are moral considerations. Christians are to care about things like diplomacy, proper authority, being deliberate, having a good cause. But Christians are also to be concerned about proportionality in war and discrimination. We shouldn't support the idea that innocents or civilians should be targeted. So those two basic reasons, I want to have a just reason for going to war, but I also want the war to be conducted in as just way as possible.
That first one requires us to take war on a case-by-case basis, doesn't it?
Absolutely. In fact, Todd, just war theory is what we call a form of selectivism. I mean, the activist position, which is by and large gone to the wayside, would be that a citizen of a country has an obligation to fight in any war its government deems necessary. But just war theory is selectivism, and we do have to accept them on a case-by-case basis.
So we begin by asking, in this particular case, is war justified? Is that the right question?
Oh, that's exactly right. That's the first question to be asked. You know, is this a just war? Do I have a just intent? What might a just intent be? Maybe to establish peace. I mean, a lot of people were killed in World War II. The numbers now, Todd, have gone up to 60 to 70 million people. We know a little bit more about what happened in the Soviet Union and in places like China. But another intent would be freedom, justice. Those are kind of fundamental issues about whether this is the kind of war a Christian should be involved in.
Is it only a consideration for individual Christians? Because that is the way we tend to think about it today. Should I support this war? Is it also a consideration for governments at large?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, one of the fundamental points that Augustine made about war was that war was something that should have legitimate authority. It should be something that the government or the state is involved in. This is not a private matter. This is not a matter of individuals. Now, of course, one interesting element of some of the wars we're engaged in now is the idea that we're not fighting countries by and large, but we're fighting ideologies, and the people may be scattered about in various countries or parts of the world. But fundamental to just war theory is the idea that this is something our government engages in, and we as citizens, a critical component in what has by and large been considered kind of a two kingdoms model of God and government, or the human duty, is that this is to be waged by our country, our government.
Is there a previous question to be asked here that's kind of been raised by some of the more recent conflicts the United States has been involved in? And that is, should we also be asking prior to these things, do we go to war to prevent something? That would be, I think they would call it preemptive. Or can we only wage war to react to something that's already occurred?
That's a really important consideration, Todd. Just war theory has, by and large, been seen as a defensive mode. That is, you do it only after deliberation, sincere diplomacy. You know, you go very slowly, taking these steps in a very deliberate way. Nevertheless, there have been people who have said, and Christian authors as well, who have said that maybe a possible criticism of just war theory is that in a nuclear age, it doesn't take into account a preemptive strike. I mean, it may be, and of course this depends on things like having good intelligence and knowing what's happening in the world, it may be that if you wait too long in a nuclear age, it will be, in fact, way too late. So that issue of just war theory being essentially a defensive mode has brought it somewhat into criticism among some Christian authors.
All right. When we come back, I want to pursue that one more step, actually have our guest, Ken, distinguish between a preemptive, it's usually called preemptive, and a reactive war. Jason in Texas has a question about that on the other side of the break. We're talking just war theory. It's Thursday afternoon, February the 17th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen On Demand page and click Share This.
Real Reformation Radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The real risk behind genetic research.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
A large part of genetic research consists of identifying certain genes likely to cause various health problems. Such genes are called risk genes because they increase a person's likelihood of developing physical or mental illness. One danger behind pinpointing these genes is that parents who carry them can be encouraged to be more aggressive in screening their unborn children for supposed defects. One of the latest risk genes identified is for autism. But are we becoming too concerned with possible risks posed by certain genes and eventually by certain people? Listen next time for more.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about just war theory. Ken Samples of Reasons to Believe is our guest. Before the break, Ken, we were talking about essentially a defensive or a preemptive war. There's a further distinction that Jason in Texas is asking us to make, and that is between preventive war, I would take that to mean trying to prevent something worse from happening in the future, and preemptive war, that would be striking first. Your thoughts there?
Yeah, that's an important distinction, I think. I mean, let's put it in kind of contemporary terms, if I might. I mean, the government of the nation of Iran has been very vocal in being anti-Israel. Iran is certainly attempting, it appears, from all of our intelligence, that they're desiring to develop nuclear weapons. Now, of course, they would argue that they're going to utilize it as a defensive element. But, I mean, let's suppose that one of these radical Islamic governments was going to use nuclear weapons, let's say, against our friends in Israel, our allies. There is a difference between a preemptive strike and a preventative strike. That is, if we could, by the use of our military, prevent something, a catastrophe, from taking place, then I think that that would be just. Now, of course, what makes all of this messy and difficult, and war is almost always tragic, and it is often messy, and it is sometimes evil. There's no doubt about that. But obviously, having excellent intelligence, having a very, very capable military, all of these things are critically important. And, of course, in our day, Todd, having the economy that can support a high-tech military becomes an important consideration as well.
Okay, let's go back into some of the things you were talking about, and that deals with the justness of war. You mentioned before a legitimate authority, generally taking it in the Christian mind to be a government or a state, not an individual or a group within a duly established authority. The second one is, and I think this is very important, moral deliberation. What is that?
Yeah, this is a very core principle of just war theory, and that is that there has to be a real effort made at persuading and deliberating. That is, that war not be seen as a knee-jerk reaction, that it not be viewed as something, you know, that we're happy to do, but rather that there's a real attempt at resolution. There's a real attempt to morally persuade people to use diplomacy to try to bring this conflict to an end before it erupts into a war. And again, the supporters of just war theory, again going back to even St. Augustine, would argue that's a critical component in it. What makes it difficult, however, is knowing when appropriate diplomacy has been utilized. There are people, when I was growing up, that thought that we had gone into Vietnam far too quickly, that we had not allowed for diplomacy to take place in those kinds of circumstances. And so knowing when is enough is certainly not an easy question to answer.
Next would be a probability of victory. Why is that important?
Well, it's the idea that, you know, is this something that can be accomplished? Is this something that has a reasonable success to it? Now, again, that could be seen in somewhat of a different way. I mean, I think there are certain things worth fighting for, regardless of whether you think the outcome will be positive or not. But nevertheless, the idea is this something that in fact can be achieved? Would it, for example, lead to total destruction of a culture or a people group, or is diplomacy the only way out?
Here's the one that probably gives everybody the most trouble because it seems to kind of loop back on itself. Just cause is usually the way it's described. You had talked before, what are you trying to achieve? What is the cause here? Someone would say, well, if you don't have that answered, you could hardly even begin the conversation about just war. Distinguish between all the elements that go into deciding whether or not a particular war is just and the isolated element of just cause.
Well, you know, this is, as you say, this is right at the heart of it all. I mean, is it a just cause? Is it in defense of the innocent? Is it freedom from direct aggression? That is this so critical that to do anything otherwise would leave me in a state of moral offense? And so the fundamental idea here would be that there is aggression, and if I do not stand up to that aggression, I will have violated my own moral conscience and the moral conscience even of our nation. Now, again, people debate about those various things, but I would argue, and I hold to just war theory, I would argue vigorously that if the innocent are attacked and if freedom is up for grabs, we have a moral obligation to stand up. And so that would be, you know, that those two categories of a just war, justness of war, and justice in war, that would be right at the top of the list.
You had mentioned this before, just in intent. Whose intent are we talking about here?
Well, hopefully for everybody, you know, the desire would be to establish peace, freedom, and justice. The goal would not be the unlimited destruction of the enemy. And again, part of the problem with war is it can easily get out of hand. It can be easy for these rules to just be thrown aside. Even my own father said that there was a strong temptation during World War II to move ahead in such a great rapidity of advance that sometimes they would not take great care about the prisoners that were taken. You have to have an intent to accomplish something, and that is to bring peace. And I would say, Todd, in my own analysis of the 20th century, World War II was an incredible loss of life. It led to an incredible loss of life, but I think it led to a powerful peace. And so the old adage, if you want peace, prepare for war, and given Christian worldview ideas about evil in the world and the human condition of being fallen, I think there's a lot of truth in that.
Now, we've come to the kind of the turning point here. We've talked about whether or not a war is waged by a legitimate authority, whether or not there's due moral deliberation, whether or not there's a probability of victory, a just cause, and justice in intent. Please make the distinction for our listeners. If you come to this point and all those conditions have been met, does that mean that anything that happens from that point on is necessarily going to be justified, that you can now justify any action you might take once you've decided this war is just?
The answer would be no. I mean, even if you were able to come to a very firm conviction as an individual and a society that you have a just reason for going to war, that this is a war that we have deliberated about, it's a war that we have good reason to have success, you still have the questions of how do we conduct that war. And, you know, even in World War II, where I think it was much more clear than Vietnam and other wars, there were still questions, even about the victorious Allies, whether they had bombed certain German cities and killed civilians, or in Japan, whether maybe the premature use of nuclear weapons or atomic weapons at the time, maybe if we would have given the Japanese longer, they would have surrendered. Well, all of these are debates that have been made, but obviously the issue of proportionality, it needs to be sufficient. There is, I think, always a danger in a war that the goal will be to just absolutely wipe the people off the face of the earth. And, you know, sometimes there's a reason why that is perceived as effective, but excessive force can be wrong. You have to you have to weigh good and evil even when you're conducting a just war.
So we're talking here about, in the conduct of war, to speak of proportionality, using only so much force as is necessary to accomplish your just cause.
Yes. And again, notice, and I mean, this is one of the criticisms of just war theory. Some people would say it dies a death of 1,000 qualifications. Hmm. You have to stack all of these up and meet all of these elements. But war is messy. I mean, there were people who said maybe we should have waited and not dropped the atomic bombs on Japan. Others postulated that if America had invaded the Japanese island in 1945, there may have been 500,000 American casualties. So how do you weigh, this is a difficult process. This is why it's so critically important for Christian people to be involved in politics and things of that nature.
Ken Samples is our guest from Reasons to Believe. We're talking about just war. When we come back, we'll talk about the toughie, proper discrimination, civilians and combatants. Stay tuned.
Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois is happy to support the Christ-centered, cross-focused ministry of Issues Etc. Join us for worship, Bible classes, youth ministry, and other opportunities to grow in Christ. We have a Christian day school for children in preschool to 8th grade. We are located at 1300 Beltline Road. Call us at 618-344-3151 or visit www.goodshepherdcollinsville.org.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Others talk. We have something to say. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Dr. John Warwick Montgomery on the 2011 International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights in Strasbourg, France.
The listeners to Issues Etc. already have had contact through the program with lecturers who will be in Strasbourg this next summer. Craig Parton, myself, Dr. Minuge, Angus Minuge, Adam Francisco, and these lecturers are people who have defended the faith, who know how to defend the faith, and who are marvelous communicators. And so, if a listener to this program wants to learn how to present the case for Christianity in a secular situation, the 2 weeks in the French Rhineland with us would be an absolutely ideal way to achieve this.
You can find out more about the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, July 5th through the 16th in Strasbourg, France, at apologeticsacademy.eu.
Come, you masters of war, you that build the big guns, you that build the death planes, you that build all the bombs, you that hide behind walls.
10 more minutes in our conversation on Just War Theory, live this Thursday afternoon, February the 17th. Ken Samples is our guest. Ken, we come to the part of justice in war that for us today, I think, is far more difficult than it has been until the recent past. And that is the ability, really, the ability to discriminate between combatants, non-combatants, civilians, soldiers, innocents. It is almost impossible to do in some circumstances where we are currently waging war.
No, that's a powerful point. I mean, and I think you're right. I think, you know, in World War II, the bombing of Dresden, do we bomb civilian cities? Will that then force the civilians to force their government to surrender? The bombing of Cambodia, outside of Vietnam during the Vietnam conflict. And then, of course, even more so today, where we're not fighting against the country of Afghanistan or the government of Afghanistan. We are, in effect, fighting Al-Qaeda. We're fighting the Taliban. It is very, very difficult to have our troops in that country to know whose loyalties fit where. But just war theory says that we do not target civilians. We do not target the innocents. But then again, the question is, how do we know which is which? And I think that the end of the Cold War and kind of more of a globalization of the country has made some of these issues even harder. And again, I think, though, that implies why Christian people should be involved in the city of man, as we speak of it, in politics, in government, in the military, at all levels, bringing to bear all of the skill and moral analysis that they can to help our country.
There is another segment of just war theory that has been set forth, or kind of a chapter opened more recently. Of course, it's not unfamiliar to classical war, but I think it's been opened by ethicists because sometimes we're not quite sure when the war's over. It's hard to tell sometimes.
Yeah.
And we go from phases of combat to other phases. It's very common nowadays. And that would be, whereas we've talked about jus ad bello, jus in bello, justice at war, justice in war, now jus post bello, that would be justice after war, how you end the thing. Talk about that briefly, if you would.
Yeah, that's that's a complicated state of affairs, because I think what was unique and powerful, particularly about the Second World War, is its the finality of it, that it was brought to an end. Of course, very quickly developed another type of war, a Cold War. But today, knowing when this war is in, I mean, if we are in fact at war with an ideology, this Wahhabism that has produced the Taliban, that has produced Al-Qaeda, how do we know when it is over, and how do we then retreat, how do we then move back to our appropriate place? One of the things I think that was great about my father's generation was that they utterly defeated, with, of course, the help of many of their great allies, both Germany and Japan, but then they rebuilt them, and now they're economic giants that compete with us. But in the world we live now, with the trickiness of knowing who we're fighting and when it will come to an end, it raises all kinds of questions. And so you're right. Now the question is, after the war, what do we do, and how do we conduct it properly? A very challenging issue.
Make the case then, Ken, that Christians ought not simply react one way or the other, to pacifism or activism, but to carefully consider, in these classical terms that we've laid out in our conversation, it case by case, the justice of any given war?
Yeah, certainly activism is the idea that as a citizen, I derive many benefits from being a citizen in the country in which I live, the society that I'm part of. And so activism says, therefore, since you derive all these benefits, you should then go to war whenever your government tells you. Well, of course, the problem with that is that governments can sometimes make deep errors. They can, in fact, at times be tyrannical. They can want to engage in unjust wars for the development of their own success in terms of dominating other countries or taking land or property. So Christians have to be very careful about analyzing whether they will contribute to a war by analyzing it. On the other hand, pacifism, largely, and this is really strict pacifism, there are pacifists who would say, I'll never use force, I'll use moral force, but I'll never use physical force. Some other pacifists would say, well, I'll be a non-combatant, I'll work in the hospital, I'll contribute, but I will not fight. But ultimately, I think that Christians have a moral obligation to stand for those who cannot stand for themselves, to stop injustice whenever they possibly can. Therefore, I think the Christian position is selectivism. It is just war. It's neither activism nor pacifism. But then I think we do have to give serious considerations to the justness of our cause. And once we are engaged in that war, we have to give serious consideration to how to wage it. And so I think ultimately, even with the criticisms that are made of just war theory, it is the most compatible theory of war when it comes to Christian theology and our understanding of Scripture.
Is the basic question here, and I think, had you asked your dad when he was either drafted or enlisted in the Second World War, why are you going? He might have said in some form or another, look, we have to combat this terrible injustice. We have to execute justice in the face of injustice. He may have said something like that. Isn't that really the basic question here when it comes to just war, either the justness of war, the justice in war, the justice after war? Isn't it really the question for the Christian, are we executing rightful justice in the face of injustice?
No, that's right on the money. That hits it on the head as far as I'm concerned. I think that Christians really, in their consideration of their commitment to their country, their commitment to the world, is really a matter of a consideration of justice. Again, it made it easier for my father that Pearl Harbor had been attacked. It made it easier for my father's generation that Hitler had used such aggression. It's more difficult in looking at other issues, but yeah, that's exactly right. What is the just thing to do, and then commit myself and all of my resources to fulfilling that in the most moral way possible.
Ken Samples is Senior Research Scholar for Reasons to Believe, based in Pasadena, California. He's author of several books, including A World of Difference, Putting Christian Truth Claims to the Worldview Test. He's also written a recent article titled War, What Is It Good For? Sometimes It's Absolutely Necessary. Ken, thank you very much for being our guest.
Always great to be with you, Todd.
You'll find a link to Reasons to Believe at our website tonight, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. St. Paul is quite clear, and he lives at a time when war was, well, in many ways simpler, but much more brutal than we know it to be today. And it was not a matter of theory. He could be compelled by his own government. Paul was, after all, a Roman citizen. He could be compelled to serve in war, whether he wanted to or not, for as long as Caesar wanted him to serve. And yet he says that these governments, ordained by God, have been given the sword, not only to execute and ensure justice within the boundaries of their own authority, but at times to execute justice elsewhere in the world, where there is no justice to be found. And you got to remember, when Paul wrote that, the Romans were not in the habit of bringing justice. They just brought order. They weren't fighting preventive wars. They were just fighting wars. They were expanding. They had found themselves the beneficiaries. The reason that they had their 200 years of peace was they had basically wiped out all their enemies. And yet Paul can still, knowing all this, still say, there are no authorities except those that are ordained by God, and they do not bear the sword in vain. So the question of justice for the Christian isn't only written small in our lives, where we always seek to serve our neighbor and seek his justice, his good, his benefit before our own, even if it means sacrifice on our part. But it's also writ large as those who are citizens under God-ordained authority, where it may become necessary for, under that authority, for us to execute justice elsewhere. Again, why? In service of our neighbor. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.